HudsonRiverRadio.com. It beats listening to nothing.
Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lubuono, and we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Intelligent Conversation podcast. We know that your time is valuable and competition, quite frankly, is fierce, but we like to think of ourselves as an alternative to all that noise. So we really appreciate you sharing some of your day with Being Frank. We stream from HudsonRiverRadio.com, where the mailman, Mr. Neil Richter, is our engineer. Of course, I call him that because he always delivered. And HudsonRiverRadio.com is our home base. But remember, you can download us wherever and whenever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That includes iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, Spreaker, and all the others. You can find the links on our Being Frank Facebook page. And please think about becoming a subscriber and leaving us a comment too. As I mentioned, we have our own Facebook page, Being Frank, of course. It's public, so check it out and follow the page for more information about the podcast. We bring our audience a new topical program every week, beginning on Fridays. Listen at your convenience. And remember, every program is archived, so you can listen to any Being Frank virtually anytime that you want. It's the intelligent thing to do. Okay. If you live in the greater New York metropolitan area, as I do, or any other major American city for that matter, you probably know someone of Sicilian ancestry, someone like me, perhaps. And despite its relatively small size, it's only 1/4 the size of Cuba, most people know at least something about the island itself, or at least they think they do. But there's so much more to learn about this ancient, challenging, historic, breathtakingly beautiful place and the people that make up its incredibly diverse and unique culture. The German philosopher Goethe said this about the island: to have seen Italy without having seen Sicily is not to have seen Italy at all, for Sicily is the key to everything. There is so much more that I need to know, even as a Sicilian American. Well, we have the perfect man to educate us. Yes, we do. Gaetano Cipolla is Professor Emeritus at St. John's University and is one of the foremost authorities on Sicilian culture. He is president and editor of Arba Sicula, an Italian edition of his Learn Sicilian, and forgive me for some of the pronunciations, and I'm sure the professor will correct me soon enough when we finish with the introduction. Ma Paramu Lu Sicilianu was published in Palermo. The success of the first textbook encouraged him to write a more advanced textbook, Learn Sicilian II, written in Sicilian. His Siciliana, Studies on the Sicilian Ethos, contains many of his essays on Sicilian culture, including what makes a Sicilian. As a translator of Sicilian poetry, he has published more than a dozen bilingual volumes. He is also editor of Legas Mignola. Professor Cipolla has received many prizes, including the Telamone Prize from Agrigento, the Pigna d'Argento, the Prosperina Prize, and Sicily's Ambasciatori Siciliana nel Mondo. Recently, his publishing house, Legas, which has published more than 150 volumes, mostly on Sicilian culture, won the prestigious Premio Nazionale per la Traduzione for 2022 from the Italian Ministry of Cultural Heritage, given to publishers and translators who have promoted Italian culture in the world. Piacere, Professor, welcome.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And forgive me for massacring. As you can tell, I need to brush up on my Italian a bit. But interestingly, it'd be part of our conversation, as our culture seems to move more towards Spanish is very commonly heard, Italian not so much, and true Sicilian, which we're going to talk about in a bit, you don't hear at all, certainly in the States and hardly even in Italy, but we'll talk about that.
Well, I don't know about that because there are, as I don't know if you know, but there are maybe 40% of Italian Americans are of Sicilian origin.
Wow, it's so
did
interesting.
You know that? 40%.
No, I did not know that. But also, as you saw in my lead-in, I mean, it's popular. There, obviously, I'm Sicilian, my whole family, my brothers and sisters, and many of my friends are as well. And it seems the diaspora, the Sicilian diaspora, is pretty vast in general, and particularly
quite
in
large.
America.
Of course, it's quite large. You would find Sicilians everywhere. In places that you probably don't even know exist. Yeah. For example, Ybor City. Have you ever heard of Ybor
yes.
City in
yes,
Florida?
I have. Yes, in Florida,
did
part
you know
of
that
Tampa.
It was,
these...
inhabited by lots of Sicilians who worked on cigar factories together with the Cubans?
Wow.
No. I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that, but I'm learning all kinds of things in this work. I'm learning that Sicilians were basically everywhere in this country, and my organization, Arba Sicula, which
you.
Literally means Sicilian Dawn, has about 1,500 members throughout the whole world, and we have at least one member in every state of the Union, even in Alaska and in Hawaii. One time I was invited for a seminar, a weekly seminar at the University of Hawaii, and there were three Sicilians waiting for me at the airport.
That's it. Wow. Incredible. Well, so let's get started. Let's go to the beginning. First, I think it's important. I think most people know Sicily is an island. I think most people are familiar that it's pretty much centrally located in the Mediterranean. But tell us a little bit more, if you will, Professor, about the topography of Sicily. What is it like? Is it a desert island? Is it a tropical island? Is it, what's the climate like? Tell us a little bit about the physical nature of Sicily.
Well, Sicily is a beautiful island. It used to be a lot more beautiful than it is now. It used to be covered with trees all over the place. It was forested left and right, and it had navigable rivers. If you go there today, you will find that maybe there's one river that is still navigable, but all the others are sort of dried up. And the reason for that is because when the Romans became, Sicily was the first province of Rome. So when the Romans came, and they, after the Punic Wars, they cut down all the trees of Sicily. And if you go in the middle of the island, you will find that all the trees have been replaced by empty spaces where they can actually grow the wheat, because Rome needed wheat to feed their armies. So that they planted wheat all over the place and destroyed the climate in a way, because the trees retain the water. And therefore, if you go in the middle of the island around Enna or Caltanissetta and all the other central located, you'll see almost a lunar landscape.
Wow.
Mountains now, without trees.
Is it a homogeneous climate, Professor? Is it known to be
a
hot and relatively
climate, and it's a beautiful climate. We have lots of sun all over the place, and the vegetation is absolutely gorgeous everywhere you go on the East Coast. But all along the coast, it's very green. If you go in the center, it becomes kind of a yellowish. However, the vegetation is wonderful. It is beautiful. Sicily is a very fertile land, obviously, because of Mount Etna, which provides most of the water for all the eastern half of Sicily, you know, where Etna is right on the oriental side, on the eastern side, so that the vegetation is great and the fertility is such that orange trees, lemon trees have to be stopped from producing their needs. Because they, if you let them alone without stopping them, they produce lemons 4 times a year.
That's absolutely extraordinary.
Yes, so beautiful island. It used to be known as the paradise. Sicily was more like the paradise for all the people in the Mediterranean basin. The Greeks came to Sicily in the 8th century before Christ. And, of course, they had circumnavigated the island many, many times until they finally decided that their land was not enough sufficient for them. And then they moved and they came to Sicily, not as conquerors, but as colonizers. Well, they came to stay. They came to stay, basically, as immigrants.
Well, not to interrupt you, and we'll get there, but and you mentioned, and we spoke of the ancient and truly ancient history. You talked about 8 centuries BC, but there's even a history before that. Who are the original Sicilians? Now, I know there were three tribes. Would you break that down? It winds up in the Trinacria. Who are the original Sicilians?
As far as we know, Sicily had been occupied for at least 10,000 years. Wow. So we have remains, archaeological remains in many caves. We have Catina. We have cave dwellers. But basically, the most important ones are people called Sicani. The Sicani. We call them Sicanians in English, who came presumably from around Spain. And the Sicani were people who lived mostly around the mountains, and they were later not replaced, but amalgamated with another group of Indo-European people, named as Siculi. Siculi is the one, are the ones who actually gave the name Sicilia to to Sicily. But we also, Sicily is also known as Sicania and Sicilia, basically. But so the Siculi were also people from the north, also Indo-Europeans. Some people believe that they were actually from around the area, the northern area, like Genova, and then perhaps Latium, the region of Rome. And presumably they spoke a kind of a Latin-based language. In any case, the Siculi became more dominant, and they created all kinds of different towns and had difficulties with the coming Greeks. They fought with Greeks several times. They revolted against the Greeks who came in the 8th century. But basically, we don't know what kind of language actually they spoke, because very little is left of their permanence there, as well as for the Sicanians. We don't know. But we also had Elymians who were part of the older group of emigrants who came to Sicily, the Elymians, who were the ones who actually founded Mount Erice on the western side near Palermo. So Elymians, Phoenicians, Greeks.
The Greeks, the Romans. The litany.
Yeah, we have about 18 different groups who came to Sicily.
Is there really? Wow.
As about 18, well, maybe more, because some people did not leave much of a trace. However, The more important ones, if you want, I can tell you,
yes,
are basically the Greeks who came in the 8th century, starting on the 8th century. In fact, my hometown of Francavilla di Sicilia is just a little above Taormina. Below Taormina, there's a town of Giardini, which today is known as Jardini Naxos, because Naxos was the new name that they added to it, because that was the place where the first colony from Greece landed. In Naxos. Naxos, and it was right there below Taormina. That was the first in 735 BC. And within 20, 30 years, the people from various parts of Greece came to Sicily. They originally had actually started up north near Ischia. That was probably the first settlement, Greek settlement. But then they moved down. They moved down to Sicily, and they founded basically all along the eastern coast of Sicily. They founded Messina, Catania, Lentini, Siracusa, then down below Gela. And then about 100 years after the first settlement, some of the people who were already there, like from Gela and from other places, they moved inland a little bit or westward, and they founded Agrigento.
Agrigento, I've been to.
Basically, Siracusa and Agrigento became the most important cities, not only of Sicily, but of all the Mediterranean. Siracusa became so powerful that, in fact, they defeated the Athenians at one point. So they were masters of the island. They created their own Greek culture. In other words, when you think of Sicily, and when you think of people like Archimedes or Archimede, as we say in Italian, Archimedes, most people in America would say, "Oh, he's Greek." He's not Greek.
He was Sicilian.
He was born in Sicily. He died in Siracusa. So that basically, I wrote an article, which is part of my Siciliana, on based on one thing, because on the premise and the prejudice that most people think that culture always moved from Greece towards Sicily, and not the way around. In fact, that is not true, because many Sicilians, actually traveled back to Greece and taught the Greeks public speaking, for example. Gorgias of Lentini. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No,
probably not. Gorgias of Lentini was a man who was skilled in public speaking, and he traveled to Athens to teach the Athenians how to speak in public. We have all kinds of things, all kinds of people.
Well, Professor, and again, and forgive me, because again, it's so complex and long and ancient. Certainly, and you were prepared to do it well. And I know it's what you do, to literally lecture hours on the history. But again, just to keep it moving along, so we have the Greeks, a period of the Greeks. Who's next? Because you mentioned at one point 18, but the more important ones.
The Greeks were basically the ones who were more influential in creating the Sicilian ethos, if you like.
Okay.
They were there because they were there not only at the beginning, from the 8th century before Christ until the Vandals came in Sicily in the 5th century after Christ. The Greeks returned basically when the Byzantine Empire took over Sicily. So the Eastern Roman Empire, which was based in Byzantium or Constantinople. Basically then had Syracuse as a capital of it. So Syracuse was the capital of the Eastern Empire. And so the Greeks came back after, in the fifth century, through the Byzantines. And after the Byzantine were defeated basically by another group of people who came to Sicily, the Arabs.
Yes.
The Arabs arrived in 827
AD.
Domini, in Mazara del Vallo, And they took over the island very slowly. It took them a long time to conquer the whole island. But from 827, it took them, let's say, until 951 or 53 to conquer all of Sicily. So it took them over 100 years. But in any case, they came and they... again, they were not just conquerors. They were there because they wanted to be there. And Sicily represented for them a kind of a paradise. And they improved Sicily in the irrigation system. They improved Sicily in importing different types of produce, oranges and all kinds of silk, all kinds of different things were introduced by the Arabs, and also all kinds of learning, because the Arabs in the ninth century were among the most educated people in the Mediterranean. And so most of the great inventions that the Arabs have given to the world came to Europe through Sicily. Mm-hmm. So Sicily was the conduit, basically, together with Spain, because the Arabs also went to Spain on yes. Around the same time. Mm-hmm. So, but they were very influential for philosophy. They translated Greek text into Latin, Arabic text into Latin also. So basically, they were very influential, and they lasted until 961, basically, 961, when they were actually replaced by the Normans.
I was going to say, the Normans were in Sicily as well, too. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The Normans, not only were they in Sicily, yes, but they created basically the first modern state. They created the first modern state in which the king assemble all the powers within his hands and controls basically everything. So, but they were very good people in the sense that they allowed other people to live their own lives without imposing their will. So that each of the Norman kings was known also by an Arabic name, so that they did not chastise the Arabs. They did not chase them away, except perhaps at the end, Frederick II exiled them to Lucera in Calabria. But that's after this. That's at the end, 1240. So the Normans created a whole new state, a whole new way of governing. In fact, you always think of having, for example, the first parliament. The first parliament, the British like to take pride in the idea that they created the first parliament. But if you go to Sicily and if you go to the Palace of the Normans or the Royal Palace of the Normans and you see the Sicilian parliament, you see two dates. One is on top of the seat where the governor or the man in charge sit, the president of the region, basically, you see two dates. One is 1131, and the other one is 1947. 1131 identifies the date of the first parliament that was held in Sicily. First parliament, which involved barons and also representations from the communes, from the towns, and of course from the royals. So those two dates, 1131 to 1947. 1947 is also an important date because it is the date when Sicily was given a constitution of itself, of its own, called the Special Statute, which allows it to make laws about what goes on the island. The first region of Italy after Italy became a republic. I don't know if you know much about after World War II. Since before World War II, Sicily was a monarchy. After World War II, the monarchy was went into exile, and it became a republic. Sicily wanted to secede from Italy in 1940. From 19, not during fascism, but after fascism, wanted to secede from Italy, because people were denying it their independence. And they formed, actually had an army that would try to fight with them. So in order to prevent Sicily from seceding from the Union of Italy, from Italy itself, they granted it a special statute. And it was the first statute that gave him the possibility to make laws about school, about the climate, about whatever, everything, even though that doesn't function very well today, because everything that happens in Italy is determined in Rome. But those two dates are important. So let's go back to a little bit.
So we had the Arabs through the 13th century, went through the Arabs. The Normans.
The Normans, and then
the late 13th. So who's next?
Yes, after the Normans, we had the Germans.
Because, the Germans, okay.
The Germans who married the last person, the last woman, the daughter of one of the Normans, Constance of Hauteville. Or Altavilla. Constance was the last Norman, and she was married off to Henry VI of Swabia, German. So the Germans came, but Henry VI wasn't very liked in Sicily, because he basically took took most of the wealth that was there. And today, for example, you find in the museums of Austria and in Vienna, you will find the mantle of his coronation, of Roger's coronation, a beautiful mantle made for his coronation. You find it in the museum in Vienna. Why? Because when Constance was given to Henry VI as a bride, she brought like 150 mules of treasure to him.
From Sicily. With him.
From Sicily, in any case. But the good thing about Henry VI is that he fathered Frederick II. And Frederick II is probably... the most important or the greatest emperor that Sicily has ever had, because he was literally, he was a man of genius, basically. He knew five or six languages. He was born not in Sicily, he was born in Jesi. And because the mother was already in her 40s, and people, you know, in the Middle Ages, people did not live that long. And certainly women did not give birth when they were 40 years old. Mm-hmm. So basically, to prove that it was her child, she gave birth in the open space, mm-hmm. in Jesi, to show that Frederick II was a real child that she gave birth to. Anyway. Frederick II became the Emperor of Sicily. He was excommunicated a couple of times by the Pope because he didn't like the idea of doing crusades, you know, because the Pope wanted him to go to Palestine and reclaim Christ's place. He didn't want to do that, so he was excommunicated a couple of times. And basically, Frederick II was an important person because he wanted to create a lay not religious. He wanted to create a different kind of culture for Sicily and for his empire, because he was emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. He was a descendant of Charlemagne.
Charlemagne. Mm-hmm.
So he was wanted to create a lay government. He created the University of Naples in 1220, 1224, I believe. And he created that because he needed people with skills for administering his dominions. So in other words, school in those days, the university of those days, were primarily interested in canon law and religious things. He wanted people to actually help him govern in an intelligent way all of the lands that he possessed. Right. And so he created the University of Naples.
Now we're through Frederick, where the Germans, after the Germans, I know there are more.
No, well, wait. I want to tell you at least one more thing about Frederick II.
Please do.
He was the people who worked for him created what we call La Scuola Siciliana. And La Scuola Siciliana is the Sicilian school of poetry, which basically adapted all the literature that was written in Provence, the Provençal, southern France. The Provençal literature was imported into Sicily through La Scuola Siciliana, which gave birth basically to Sicilian language. The Sicilian language, which was spoken in different ways, but Sicilian language became the first Neo-Latin language to be used for poetry in Italy, Sicilian. So when people tell you that Sicilian is a dialect, they mean that Sicilian is a corruption of something. Sicilian is not a corruption of Italian. Sicilian is its own language, and it not only is it its own language, it's the first language used for poetry in Italy. Dante himself, just to give you that I'm not inventing this stuff, Dante himself said that for the first 150 years of Italian literature, whoever wrote poetry wrote it in Sicilian. Not even those who were not Sicilian, because at the court of Frederick II, he had people from different parts of Italy. And so they actually wrote it in Sicilian. And in doing that, they created the canon of Italian language, the canon which then moved up north. It moved up north after Frederick II in 1250. He died in 1250. And then it moved up to Florence, where Florence became more important because of Dante, Petrarch, Boccaccio, who actually used Florentine. But the one thing about Sicilian is that you know what happens when somebody falls from grace, when somebody's power is no longer able to be exercised, what happens to his imprint? It dies. So that basically all the, I'll give you one thing and then we can go on for other things, but all the poetry written in Sicilian disappeared. In the original Sicilian disappeared, and it was preserved in sort of a Florentine translation. So all that we have of the original Sicilian poetry was maybe one or two poems. All the others are basically Florentine amanuenses, people who write, from the copiers, people who copied the Sicilian text, didn't understand it, or adapted it and changed the endings and changed words, substituted other things. And so that Sicilian was turned into a kind of a mixed Florentine. So that we don't know what Sicilian language was exactly then, because we have nothing left. But of course we can reconstruct, that. In fact, I did one thing. Recently, I translated a few a few poems by the man who invented the sonnet. Do you know who that was?
No, please.
Not Shakespeare. No. Certainly not Shakespeare.
Although he set many of his plays in Italy and a couple in Sicily as well, too. Although
right.
Yes.
But he didn't invent the sonnet. Giacomo D'Alentini invented the sonnet.
Okay.
And it basically came, it was a combination, you know, the typical Italian, Sicilian composition is made of 8 lines of poetry. When you add 6 more lines of poetry, you get a sonnet. So Giacomo D'Alentini invented the sonnet.
Professor, I think it's a perfect segue because one of the recurring themes that we're hearing here is the mixing. Okay, from different cultures that came not only, as you said, not only conquered, but assimilated. So it begs the question then, what is, and you mentioned the word ethos, what is the Sicilian ethos? What is a Sicilian? Are they Italian? Are they their own? Are they a hybrid? What would you say then? What is the makeup? Well, what makes a Sicilian?
Well, that is not a very easy question to answer. And I sent you a copy of my little book.
Yes.
What makes a Sicilian? And I'm sure you read it.
I did.
You know that that is not a very easy thing. I cannot give you one simple answer to that. Sicilians are very complex people whenever you think that you have found the key to understanding what they're made of, then something else comes up and the key doesn't work anymore. So basically, Sicilians have something that they share with other Sicilians. You can recognize Sicilian. In fact, there was some of the people who came to Sicily, like, for example, some French writers, for example, who came to Sicily and said, there is nothing more different from a Neapolitan than a Sicilian. Because you can see the way they do it. And then he goes on to actually say, some of the things that made the distinction for him, in the sense that he says, when you cross the Strait of Messina, the first thing that you hear is a timbre of the voice, the kind of orientalized sound.
It has an Eastern feel to it, yes, particularly in the East, absolutely.
So basically, Sicilians are very complex and very, how would I say, very, very difficult people to understand. However, you know that they love certain things and they hate other things. They love their family. Their family is the center of their universe. Mm-hmm. They love their mothers. Their mothers are the center of the universe. You know, you think of Sicily as a patriarchal society, but the father has, what we say, a typical the real power is in the woman. Women are the ones who make the glue that holds together families in Sicily. So that is very important and they are the ones who actually administer and create the kind of ethos where things, you have to observe certain rules and you have to behave in a certain way in order not to lose face. Sicilians do not like to make a bad showing of things. Mm-hmm. The term of fare una bella figura, to show a good,
cut a beautiful himself, figure, cut yes.
A so good figure English, yes. is a very important thing.
Wow.
We have a saying that if you lose your reputation, you are damned to hell, in effect. I have some quotes. Well, you read some.
I have to move. Just forgive me. I have to move it along. I'm keeping my eye on the time, and I'm going to take a quick break. But when we come back, and we're mentioning the Sicilian head, the ethos. And unfortunately, in this country, it's often stereotypical and not in a complimentary sense. I think the perpetuation of the image of the gangster, of the mafia, et cetera. I want to talk a little bit about how that seeped its way into the Sicilian mindset, and in particular, what other people think of Sicilians. And also sometimes, and I don't know if you've experienced it, but I would like to get your take on it. I have to honestly say there have been times where I've noticed some bigotry, even from other Italians. Your proximity to Africa, the fact that you've been conquered by Arabs, that. I'll give you the opportunity to address that because I think it's important. I've heard I felt the sting. So I think it's an honest question that we can have. Appreciate it, Professor. We're going to come back in just a minute. Where our show tonight is everything you thought about Sicily and Sicilians, but we're afraid to ask. Your question being, Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobuono. We'll be right back after these brief commercial messages.
HudsonRiverRadio.com.
Bring a dash of green into your life. Check out The Many Shades of Green with Maxine Margot Rubin and Malcolm Berman. Get informed about environmental issues and current events that affect us all. Pick a shade of green and raise your eco-consciousness with The Many Shades of Green. Available on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. HudsonRiverRadio.com. Be sure to check out Hudson River Radio's limited series podcast, Live from Electric Lady Studios, featuring bands like Foreigner, George Thorogood and the Destroyers, and Alice Cooper. Live from Electric Lady Studios was produced in the 1990s by Electric Lady for WNEW-FM in New York City and was hosted by legendary DJ Pat St. John. It featured a different band each time and was recorded live with a small in-studio audience. Check out Live from Electric Lady Studios on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
HudsonRiverRadio.com.
Welcome back to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobuono. It's the Intelligent Conversation podcast. Remember, we stream from HudsonRiverRadio.com, but you can check us also out wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and at any time you choose to listen to it. Everything is archived, so you can catch it at your convenience at Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcasting platforms. Thank you so much for joining us, my guest tonight, as we discuss everything you want to know about Sicily and Sicilians, but we're afraid to ask. It's Gaetano Cipolla. He's professor emeritus at St. John's University and one of the foremost authorities on Sicilian culture. Professor, welcome back. Again, we're doing the truncated version. Again, trying to capture 3,000 years of very, very involved history in just an hour's period of time is difficult to do. But one of the things I do want to address, and we teased it a little bit before the commercial, is you and I, being Siciliani, and share a certain kindred spirit and know the strength that lies within the Sicilian culture. But not everybody feels the same way. Often the image projected of Sicilians is not the best, often associated with gangsters, of course, because of the mafia influence in Sicilian culture. How did that happen? How strong is it? What should people really know about Sicily, Sicilians, and the mafia once and for all?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. I can tell you that recently they captured another godfather in who had been hiding in
30 open, years.
30 years hiding in plain sight. Mm-hmm. So obviously that is a problem, but I can tell you that it is a problem that is a small problem in terms of the importance of Sicilian life. I always think of it as something that people have to live with, but I find that focusing on the mafia is really like missing the point. You miss the point because, in effect, Sicilian people have been maligned for ages.
Yes.
Especially in this country, based on nothing, because the people, everyone who has gone to Sicily, from Ibn Jubayr, an Arabic traveler of the 11th, 12th century, said Sicily was a paradise, and the people are extremely generous, welcoming. They really do not deserve to be associated with the mafia. So the mafia is like a disease that somehow has affected us. As I said, basically, it has affected us to the point that whenever I meet a Sicilian, mm-hmm. The first thing they tell me is, "Professor, I am proud of being Sicilian." Mm-hmm. I am so proud of being Sicilian. I didn't ask them to volunteer that information, and I have never heard a person from another part of Italy come up to me and say, "I am proud of being Bolognese." Mm. I am proud of Venetian. I am proud of being Roman. Why not? Because what they are doing, they are basically telling me that all the people, all the stuff that is being said about Sicily is a lie. I am proud of being Sicilian. And they tell me that. They tell me that without my asking. Other people have no desire or no need to come up and say that. They want to put the lie to the what the media have spread all over the place. All these movies about the mafia, all the Godfathers, mm-hmm. The Godfathers and Padrinos and all the other stuff. One time, I had an issue with the New York Times once, because one time they published an article which basically said that 10% of the Sicilian population lives on the mafia. Now, 10% of the Sicilian population living on the mafia means that there are 500,000 people who are employed and making a living on the mafia. That means one tenth of Sicilian population. So if you happen to be in a crowd of Sicilian, one out of those 10 people would probably be a mafioso. That's garbage. That's absolute
nonsense.
Garbage.
I know. But it persists. That's what's so frustrating.
People
will come
like,
when they hear my name and I'll say, "Oh, well, I'm a proud Sicilian." And immediately, as particularly the Americans, nobody in my family is in the mafia.
Even people who are Italian themselves will do that. Now,
yes,
the people who came to this country were obviously people who didn't have much of an education. They mm-hmm. didn't know how to read or write in most cases. They certainly didn't know anything about Sicily. They didn't know. They were born in one town. They lived in that town until they died, and they emigrated to the United States only to escape poverty. And what happened after Sicily became part of Italy? Right now, I am going to be publishing a book by a man named Zeppe Chano, who is a Sicilianist, who was a Sicilian. He just passed away. Who tells the story of how Sicily became a colony when Garibaldi came to invade it and conquer it and hand it to Victor Emmanuel II of Piedmont. So the book is going to be told from the Sicilian point of view. And so that, because people sometimes, history is sometimes written by people who win.
Yes.
The victors win and they tell stories. So this book is going to be telling the story of how things went when Sicily when 1,000 people, 1,000 soldiers came to Sicily, which had an army of 25,000 people, well armed and well trained, and were defeated by 1,000 people. So it happened because there was betrayals left and right, because the British, for example, enjoyed the idea of having one Italy that involved also Sicily, so that they would somehow counter the influence of the French. So all kinds of things that happened. In any case, the mafia was a blight on Sicily, but it's a very small part.
Quickly, Professor, we don't have a lot of time, but again, to me, it's a matter of curiosity. How did it originally insert itself into Sicilian culture? Can you help us with that at all? How did it, where did it come from? What are the roots, if you will?
Well, again, there are many different theories about it, but basically, when you have a state that does not do its function, a state that does not behave, that does not control and apply the laws that are written in the book. So when there is a total absence of a state that where you can go to right wrongs, then it creates a kind of a vacuum,
a vacuum
of power. Mm-hmm. And that vacuum of power, especially in the late 19th century, was filled by brokers, power brokers, who worked for the landed gentry in Sicily, who owned thousands of acres of land and spent their times sitting around in Palermo rather than being on the land, and they assigned the running of these lands to what they call the gabellotti. The gabellotti are the people, the power brokers, tenant farmers who would hire people, and they were basically the ones who even exercised what they call their own form of justice. So that basically, there was a vacuum of power, and the state was absent. In the absence of the state, all kinds of people took advantage of it by creating their own laws. And so they had people, these gabellotti walked around on horseback with shotguns on their back, and
took the power and took the literally just right. Basically.
But that's basically. Let's say that was the rural mafia. Of course, today we don't have a rural mafia. We have a civil mafia where power is shared with politicians and with the other people who hold the power, so that there's always a connection between the power structure of the people who are elected. The politicians basically in cahoots with the mafia. I mean, we saw in the last 50 years, we have seen that documented, where politicians were always in cahoots with the mafia and did their bidding to get votes and to get themselves reelected. And so it's a very complex thing. But again, that does not... that should not be. It should not detract. It should not qualify. It should not qualify a Sicilian. I'm a Sicilian. I never heard about the mafia until I came to this
people,
country.
It's the people that I'll look at them and say, I don't know what you're talking
about. I lived in Sicily for 18 years.
Yeah.
I was there for the first 18 years of my life. When I came to this country, I learned about the mafia. How is the mafia?
Yeah. From amazing. Well, you know, Professor, your work, and I want you to talk a little bit about it, your work is to dispel those stereotypes.
Can I add one more thing?
Yes,
the mafia
please.
Was reinstalled in Sicily, presumably after Mussolini had done away with it. He didn't really do that. It remained hidden someplace, but it was reinstalled by the American Army, who used Lucky Luciano to help him do the invasion of Sicily. So that people who were in the mafia or who were, say, power brokers became the mayors of a town, thanks to the help that they provided to Sicily.
Amazing.
But what are you going to do? It's a very complex thing. It's not a pleasant thing.
We're going to accentuate the positive with your work. Tell us a little bit about your work, what you hope to accomplish. And I also know you have a poem in the Sicilian language that we'd love to have you read.
Basically, I founded three series of books. One is called Poeti d'Arpa Sicula, Poets of Arpa Sicula, and we have 17 different volumes in that with my translation. And the second series is called Sicilian Studies, which has like 30 volumes dealing also with Sicilian culture, Sicilian history, Sicilian sociology, etc. The poet series has 17 different volumes of the major poets, ancient as well as modern. So I've done translations of Giovanni Melli. Giovanni Melli was the most important poet of the 18th century. I have translated most of his work into English. I have translated some works of Antonio Veneziano, who was the most famous and the most gifted poet of Sicily in the Renaissance. He was so great that whenever people read a poem of his that didn't know who had written the poem, they assumed that it was written by him. Antonio Veneziano, remember that name. He's really an important fellow. I've translated Martoglio. I've translated lots of people. One person, maybe I can read you one poem.
Please do.
Which is basically like the national anthem of our organization, Arpa Sicula. And it was written by a man named Ignazio Butita, who passed away about 12 years ago, that says basically that when people lose their language that was learned by them from birth, then they become enslaved. They become poor and enslaved when they lose their language. And so for us, for Arpa Sicula, whose ideal, whose objective is basically the preservation of the Sicilian language, he became an important poet. Like, it's called Lingua e Dialetto. I'll read you the Sicilian and I'll read you the English as well. I hope you have time. If not,
please.
Sure, we'll have time, right?
Yes.
If not, you can edit it.
Yeah, I'm getting the nod from Neil, the engineer. We have some time. Please do.
So, lingua e dialetto. Un popolo, mettitolo a catina, spugliatilo, attuppatici a bucca, è ancora libero. Levatici un travaglio, un passaporto, un letto, un dorme, è ancora ricco. Un popolo diventa povero e servo quando ci arrobbano a lingua, addutata di pace, e perso per sempre. Diventa povero e servo quando i paroli non figgiono paroli e si mangiano ciadigli. Men ad ogni ora venti accordo a chitarra tu dialetto che perdi una corda lo giorno. Venci a ripezzo a tila camoluta che ti sero i nostri avi culana di pecori siciliani. E sogno povero, aio i denari e non li posso spendere, i gioielli e non li posso regalare, u canto da gaggia cullali tagliati. Un povero cadatta dei mini scippi da mace putativa, cauchiama figlio Vinciuria. Nuace l'aveva amace della Rubaro. Aveva i minni a fontana di latti e ci vippero tutti, ora ci sputano. Ne restò a voce d'idda, a cadenza, a nota vascia, tu sono e du lamento. Chi se non ne può non rubare? Ne restò a somiglianza la natura, i gesti, i lampi dall'occhi. Chi se non ne può non rubare? Non ne può non rubare, ma restiamo poveri e orfani, lo stesso. Do I have time to read the translation? I guess I should, because there are
Neil, many people. We got another minute or two. Yeah, Neil, he's the man. You know, the mailman says we can, so let's do it.
All right. Language and dialect. A people, put them in chains, take away their possessions, plug their mouths, they are still free. Take away their jobs, their passports, the table where they eat, they are still rich. People become poor and enslaved when you rob them of the language inherited from the fathers. They are lost forever. They become poor and enslaved when words do not give birth and devour one another. I realize this now as I tune the guitar of my dialect that loses a chord every day. While I mend the moth-eaten cloth that our ancestors wove with wool of Sicilian sheep. And I am poor. I have money, but I cannot spend it. I have jewels, and I can't give them away. A song inside a cage with clipped wings. A poor man who sucks the dry tits of a would-be mother who calls him son as an insult. We had a mother once. They robbed us of her. She had breasts like fountains of milk, and everyone drank from her. Now they spit at her. Her voice has remained in us, her cadence, the low note of the sound and the lament. They cannot take these things from us. Her resemblance has remained, her way of to walk, her gestures, the flashing eyes. They cannot take these things from us. They cannot take them from us, but we remain poor and orphans just the same.
Wow. Hey, Bella, grazie mille, il professore. Thank you so much.
I'm glad we were able to do it. I hope I wasn't rambling too much.
Very powerful. No, good stuff. We appreciate it. We'd like to thank our guest, Professor Gaetano Cipolla, for being frank and for his intelligent conversation. And of course, special thanks to our listeners who take the time to give us a voice in their lives. Remember, we offer a fresh topic every week, and you can catch us wherever and whenever you get your favorite podcasts, like Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and more. You can also check us out on the Being Frank Facebook page. Let me leave you with a couple last nuggets. I mentioned Shakespeare, who sent many of his plays, I think about 18 of them in Italy, and a couple in particular in Sicily. And this is one of the things he said. The climate delicate, the air most sweet, fertile the isle, the temple much surpassing the common praise it bears. Ah, that's Shakespeare. Good stuff. I'll leave you with some original music. Remember, we close every show with some original music. It's always good stuff with some great artists. This week, we have Laura Lee Hubbard and her song, Let Love. Thanks, everybody. I'm your host, Frank Lobono, and we'll see you on the next Being Frank.
Sick, sad, and feel left out in all the things. This is HudsonRiverRadio.com.